Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times. To spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worthit.
Hi, I'm Imri, the host of the Wannabe Podcast, the podcast that takes you from where you are now to where you want to be in 30 minutes or less. I am so excited that you are back. Thank you for joining me again. You could be listening to anyone, but you're choosing to listen to me. This week, I am joined again by my good friend and personal tarot reader, Leona Nicole Black. Leona is a tarot therapist who launched her tarot business last year. She has a YouTube channel where she does monthly general tarot readings for each sign, and she is currently studying her PhD at Leeds University. Listen to episode 45, where we talk about overcoming fear and introducing spirituality into your processes. In today's episode, we talk about how powerful reading is, that's books, not tarot, the right time to seek professional intervention for your depression or anxiety. We cover how the different types of therapy can impact your life, and we talk about the power of thoughts and what to do when you're feeling like you're not good enough. I hope it helps. Hi, Leona. How are you?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. Right, so the first question I ask everyone is, who did you want to be before you became who you are and why?
Interesting. Bell hooks.
That's what?
Really easy answer for me.
Why?
I think I knew I wanted to be a writer from very young. I was writing when I was like 10 years old. I was just like writing stories, very terrible ones. As my friends ended up telling me in secondary school that like, this is trash. Aww. But I was always away in my mind. So writing was always a passion for me and something I wanted to do. And then I guess I began to become aware of my intellectual capabilities and just my interest in social justice. And reading Bell Hooks' work, it just really changed my life, but also bridged the intellectual with the social and the cultural, which is what I care about. Really talking about things like emotions and family life and love, and but in a critical way. Mm-hmm. And it blew me away, really blew me away. And I was like, that's the goal. That's it. Her.
You know? So you wanted to be Bell Hooks.
I did.
A feminist writer or a writer in the way that she is a writer and is able to break down complex theories and ideas, or you just cared about the subject matter?
It was like all of the things.
Just everything about
it was
her.
Everything in the sense of I loved how accessible her work was.
Yeah.
Without being simple, actually. It wasn't that her ideas were simple, but she recognized the audience and the community that she was writing to, and she wanted to convey something in a way that they could understand. It was absolutely like, I'd heard a lot about feminism growing up and it meant nothing to me. So she was the avenue through which I understood it as something that could personally transform me. So definitely kind of writing with a Black feminist viewpoint, mm-hmm. not necessarily needing to write about feminism itself, but just understanding that it's a kind of theoretical perspective that informs the lens in which I look at the world and experience my life. So there was that element of it. But also just seeing her... Even seeing her age, like just the way she found grace, you know, in her being, and even small things about how she shifted and like her hairstyles, and you know, Belle's just going out there with like little plaits and stuff, and there was just so much about her that I found like this is really aspirational, right down to, you know, at one point I watched an interview of her and she was talking about drawing in on both Christianity and Buddhism. And I was raised Christian myself. So understanding like how you broaden your spiritual perspectives, she was it. I was like, bell hooks has just given me the roadmap.
Wow. That sounds like a great answer. I wish I had someone like that.
Well, that's changed. She actually isn't my, she's no longer my go-to person, but for a long time she was.
That's amazing. Why is she no longer the person that you're kind of aspiring to? And did you ever pursue writing in the end?
Wow. I started a PhD. So in terms of did I pursue writing, having to write a 100,000 word thesis, I think that counts.
100,000 words is like bigger than a book.
Yeah, that counts, I would say. I blogged, obviously. There was just that season where blogging became an outlet for a lot of us, particularly Black women, to express our worldview and our creativity. So I remember like all the way from like my MySpace days, like putting things out. So interestingly, I've been writing publicly for a long time. I do consider myself a writer, although I'm in a hiatus stage at the moment. Mm-hmm. The reason I guess that her being my guiding light in some sense has shifted is because my sense of self has shifted, or I think I was constructing my identity very strongly around my being an intellectual person and around my academic career, you know. So mm-hmm. she was not just inspirational, but she had given me like a blueprint of how I would navigate the university, what a career path could look like for me. And that has really changed, you know. Like, I don't want to be a university lecturer at this point in my life. That has really shifted. So yeah, who I'm aspiring to or looking at or learning from has changed in tandem with how I'm changing internally.
That makes perfect sense. I think that's only natural. Mm. What was the thing that, was there like a specific moment that sparked that shift, or has it been kind of a gradual change?
I would say the answer's kind of both, as in there was a catalyst, so yes, to speak, a moment in my life in which, well, maybe many moments, but definitely a moment where I recognized that academia and intellectualism and my, you know, my career as a researcher was a place I was escaping into, and that I had kind of abandoned the other parts of myself, particularly my creative self. Mm-hmm. I remember like saying to some of my friends many, many years ago that I was no longer going to write in a public space. Like, I was writing very creatively. I was writing about my depression. I was writing about my heartbreak. And I decided that I was just going to stop. Like, I was no longer going to make my inner life available. I was going to close down my vulnerability.
Yeah.
And that wasn't just in terms of a blog space. I did that in my life altogether. And so I shut down my emotional self and just became very rational and was like, this is what's going to keep me safe. This is what's going to get me money. This is what's going to, yeah, you know, get my life where I want it to be. And so I had an experience that was like, it forced me into recognizing that I had suppressed and repressed so much and I needed to deal with it. And so that was the catalyst. And I guess the last 2 years for me of like emotional, personal and spiritual growth has been what has gradually made me seek other sources. It's not that I discount bell hooks whatsoever.
Yeah.
I still love her work and still engage, but I just draw on a broader sense of sources now. And I'm not so fixed in, like, I put on my Facebook the other day that freeing myself of the kind of obligation or the duty I felt to be smart was like one of the most liberating things I do. Like, I don't care about being smart, a smart person anymore. Like, this oh, nice. Doesn't bother me.
I think you're just naturally smart though, no?
I'll take the compliment.
You're smart. You're doing a PhD.
I'll take the compliment, but I just feel like there was so much anxiety about around being writing.
How did you even get to that point though? So
being very wrong.
Wrong about a lot of things, or wrong about just like one big thing, and you were just like embarrassed to hell and you're like, you know what? Maybe this isn't for me.
Speaking that way, honestly, beyond just like being wrong sometimes, depression. Really understanding that my depression was rooted in my perfectionism and the very unrealistic expectations I placed on myself and what my life should look like and who I should be and what I should be doing. I read The Gift of Imperfection by Brené Brown. Really like Brené Brown. So again, she's another academic and her research was on vulnerability. So both her and bell hooks were like, for me, we kind of call it affect theory in academic circles, but being able to take your emotional life seriously. The very thing I'd run away from, I found this field in an intellectual space that was like, actually all of that is super valid.
Yeah.
So in a very, very, very depressed state, someone recommended the book to me and it changed me. I was like, oh wow, like there is just a, I am making myself ill by the ways that I'm thinking about things and the expectations I'm placing on myself. So I guess that was the beginning of me embracing my imperfection, so to speak. But just finding a path to more freedom, you know, just being a lot freer about everything.
I actually just have like a really, I'm going to say a normal young adolescent path into literature. So I had the Jacqueline Wilsons, the J.K. Rowling,
I read those. Yeah.
The Philip Pullmans, but I do want to start reading more. I've got the thirst for it. I've just ordered Shonda Rhimes's autobiography, so we'll see how that goes. And yeah, this is a good chat on literature. I didn't expect us
to go down this lane,
go down this path, but yet here we are. Right, so to steer the conversation on, can you tell me about a time that you really wanted to quit? And did you quit?
Ooh, what's my take on this question? Yes. I can tell you about a time I wanted to quit and I did. Quitting is sometimes very important. Yes, I was 2010, I think, and I was fresh out of uni. I'd graduated first class.
Congratulations. Congrats.
But I was also having one of the worst years of my life. And within, I think, a couple of weeks, I was into a full-time job. I'd worked for most of my...
This is Nicole Hannah-Jones, creator of the 1619 Project from the New York Times Magazine. The project makes a case that you don't often hear in history textbooks, that slavery was foundational to America. So it wasn't surprising that we ignited a fierce debate among historians about these issues. But that's the power of the New York Times, to spark an important dialogue with bold, rigorous reporting that forces us to examine our assumptions. To learn more, go to nytimes.com/worth it.
Undergraduate years anyway, so because that's life and I needed to help support myself. And I was temping in the NHS in the hospital and I got a job as a PA to a director. Now, this is the thing for me. This is like where all of this stuff had to fall away, because that was a very kind of respectable job and it had some prestige and people were happy for me. The pay was better. I jumped in pay bands like by two levels to get that job. So it was fantastic. And it was hell. I hated the job. I thought I need to be careful about how I talk about this person, because they're a real human being out in the world. But I was not compatible with them for this job whatsoever. Yeah. There we go. I was struggling. I'll be honest as well. I felt like I kind of oversold myself a bit in the interview. You know, you learn on the job, but I was mad stressed trying to learn on this job.
Yeah.
But also it just wasn't in keeping with any of my skills, you know, and I'm not the sort of, I am such a maverick and such an independent person and I like to work alone.
Yeah.
And so this service role of like trying to meet the needs of another person was actually very personally traumatizing to me. Maybe because of some of the challenges I've had in the relationship with my mom.
Yeah.
Having a whole other person whose needs I was constantly like trying to figure out how to meet and constantly failing, it felt like, was anxiety inducing. I was very depressed without even recognizing it. So I was just really, really struggling in that role. And I got to a point where I just felt like I cannot do this anymore. Like, I was so depressed. I thought I just cannot. And I did quit. And
I lasted
3 months. They were furious when I left, because obviously it had been a big recruitment process and they were also in the middle of a lot of change and stuff. But I was just like, I honestly cannot function. Like, I quit. And not only did I quit and went to bed. Like, I quit and didn't get another job. Like, I was just so fundamentally broken internally. So that quitting was like pivotal for me, because that was the period of time in which I first went to therapy. So that was the trigger. Like, my aunt God bless her, was like, yeah, this is serious. You know, this is really bad. And you actually need real help. You know, like, you're not going to get over this by sleeping it off or, you know, retail therapy or any of these things. Like, you need some support. And yeah, I went to see the GP and the rest is kind of history. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to quit and I did. And I felt like quitting was really important in getting me well.
Well done. Amen for that, because it sounded pretty horrendous just listening to it.
Yeah,
it was what bad. Kind of therapy did you get, by the way? I'm just curious.
Ooh, and I've had plenty. The most common thing I find that they recommend on the NHS is CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. It was fantastic for me, I would say. I was in all sorts of mental loops at that time, and that was what had... I felt like in some ways my mind had literally broken.
Could you explain what CBT is for people that may not know? I mean, I've done it twice too, so I kind of know.
Okay, so this is not a professional definition, just so everybody knows.
The real life version.
The user end, what I think it is. It is about, for me, I think CBT is about looking at your mental patterns, looking at the way you think about things and giving you tools to kind of shift your thinking in ways that, I guess, keeps you more healthy or is more empowering for you.
Yeah.
So I've been really anti-therapy before that, just because it seemed like something middle-class white people do.
Girl, you're speaking to my whole mother there.
I feel like it's different now. I feel like the stigma has been, you know, reduced somewhat within the black community. But definitely then, 2010, like, we weren't talking about therapy publicly the way we are now. So I felt like it was an indulgence. It didn't make sense. And I particularly did not want a white therapist. I knew that much. Like, there was no way I was going to trust a white person with these very complex, deep, personal, race-related as well issues I was having. But I was blessed with an Asian therapist, and she was amazing. I was about to say her name, but she might not appreciate that. So,
many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I will keep her confidentiality. She was incredible, really compassionate. The thing for me is that I couldn't believe that stranger cared about me so much. Like, she really genuinely cared about me. I remember a time in one of our sessions, and she literally just said, I was thinking about you, and she was recommending a book for me. And I was shocked. I was like, so when you leave, you think about me? Like,
it's not just like a job.
Yeah. I was like, she's actually thinking about me outside of this specific 1 hour appointment I have with her and about getting me well. And she was such an advocate for my well-being, and she really showed me, like, one of the things I found most helpful. She helped me get to some of my core beliefs, which is kind of what CBT does. It's all about kind of identifying your patterns of your thinking. And one of my biggest beliefs, which I'm still undoing, is I'm not good enough, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that was functioning at a deep level for me and was shaping everything I was doing and feeling, this constant, I'm not good enough, I'm bad, I'm not enough. And so her approach with me was like, okay, well, let's test these thoughts, you know, like, let's look at some scenarios. Like, is this, you know, is this an evidence-based perspective that you have or not?
Oh my God, yes.
So that was
me
that.
As well.
I found it helpful. Through that process, I ended up becoming well enough to apply for my master's and kind of getting back on track with my greatest ambition, which was to be an academic. So I love her for the loving care that she gave me. And it really did put my mind back together. But like I said, I thought that was the beginning. I think CBT in some ways is a really good immediate intervention, but Absolutely. It doesn't really address I don't think CBT addresses trauma.
It really doesn't.
No.
They've given me CBT twice. Mm-hmm. And the first time, definitely great for what it needed to do. Mm-hmm. I was dealing with a lot of things at once. And it was really common sense, actually. Like, I remember going to that first session and being like, Well, yeah, of course it works like that. Like, duh. Like, your thoughts impact your behaviors, and then you kind of go through a cycle, which you kind of really can't get out of. And so you have to kind of break those down. And I found a lot of the tools really, really helpful. So, mm-hmm. like, documenting my mood was really helpful on a day-to-day basis. And I found that I got more depressed or had more depressed thinking when I was doing nothing or when I was commuting on the train and I wasn't listening to anything. So no music. So the difference, it was like, well, what behavior can you do to change that? Well, I can listen to music or have a Kindle and read a book. And immediately that kind of just shifts that pattern that I was in. So I found loads of the tools really helpful. The second time though, I kind of get recurring patterns of depression and anxiety almost every year, like clockwork, at the exact same period of time. In spring, it just comes at me. Okay. And I don't know where that's coming from. I don't remember any specific moment in my life which happened to be more traumatic at that period of time, but every year around that same time. And I remember going through what was one of my worst periods this year, actually. And I remember calling the doctors and they still recommended CBT. And I was like, I don't want CBT. Like, it's not, I already use all the tools. Like, these tools aren't getting me out of this kind of hamster wheel situation of clearly there is a trauma here that needs to kind of be dealt with and purged. And I kind of know what some of it is. I don't know. And there's things that have been piled onto it. So I know what some bits are, but not all of it. So yeah, I feel like I definitely need a different one, but they keep recommending me that one. And I'm like, well, my options are CBT again or pills. So far, pills have just been holding me down. So I'm cool for now. But yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that with the listeners and myself as well, because I think a lot of people probably need access to therapy or just need therapy and won't do it or are scared of what it means and haven't heard like people like them say, yeah, maybe there's something more to this that you might need professional interventions for. And it's really not as bad as you think. It's actually just going to a room and sitting down and having a nice chat with a
person. I'm super open about it. One, because I feel like it honestly saved my life, because like I said, I couldn't go to work. I couldn't leave a bed, you know? So I definitely needed more than, you know, a pep talk. But I have done private therapy. So after that, when I was feeling like, okay, that didn't really address the full issues, I did psychodynamic therapy.
I've never heard of that one before. I've heard of psychotherapy, but...
Well, it is psychotherapy, but it's just a type of it. And that was super helpful. Like, that definitely really healed some very, very deep issues for me. And this is the thing I would say as well. When you start doing that type of therapy, that can be hard. That can be painful. And I'm not saying that to like deter people, but it is about doing the emotional work. It's just like, you know, a surgery is traumatic on your body. You know, like the doctor has to cut you open. It's a painful process. You will heal eventually. Maybe it will remove whatever is ultimately ailing you and probably risking your life. But there is some damage to your tissues in order to get to that. And I feel like the therapeutic process, particularly psychodynamic, is the same. Like, I remember feeling my trauma come out, you know, like feeling like I got opened up and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm in so much pain. And it's pain I obviously had that was affecting me, but I had like cut myself off from.
Yeah.
Like, it was like taking like painkillers every day to numb myself. And when I became sensitive to what was wounding me, that was hard. It was very difficult. You need your support systems in place. You know, you need the things that can keep you on track so you can navigate it. I am not in pain every day anymore. Yeah. And I was, I really, and not even after that, I still was, to be honest. Like, there was just so much in there, like you say, like so much piled on top, that I remember saying to my aunt once, it just hurts. Like, I'm just constantly in pain, constantly in emotional pain. I'm now in a point in my life now where I feel good. I genuinely feel good. Like, I have highs and lows, you know, that's how life works, but I am not carrying a knife in my chest. You know, I can breathe. Like, I'm sensitive to both my pleasure and my pain.
That sounds amazing. All right, I'm going to push on with like my GPs and just be like, you need to give me something else, or I just need to just pay for somebody to do it. I might just invest in it on myself, because I feel like it's worth the investment. And that's the thing. I spend money on other stupid things that I do not need. And the one thing that I should be doing, because I'm a massive believer that a lot of what your thoughts, what you're thinking can impact what you want. I do believe that. I do believe that your thoughts can essentially lead you to exactly where you want to be. And half the time, not every situation is anyone's fault, but a lot of the times, and I'm being very careful when I say this, not every situation is your fault. But sometimes your thoughts can lead you into your place in life or your position in life.
Yeah.
And I don't want to constantly be feeling like I'm a broken person. I don't want to keep saying I'm broke because I never have money. Like, I have access to money. There's actually no reason. I'm not broken because of that. And like, your language and all your thoughts matter.
Yeah.
And when you were saying like a lot of your fundamental beliefs about yourself, like you're not feeling good enough. I remember feeling exactly that. Like, I am not good enough. And I'm like, I've achieved a lot of things. Like, I have to keep rolling back. Like, no, you have achieved that. And going back through those CBT tools of, well, what is the evidence that to say you failed? And I had a situation at work similar to you, but not, it didn't start off bad. I did last a lot longer. It was very positive in the beginning and then it got bad. But this person actually broke my whole spirit.
Wow.
Told me I wasn't good enough. Said all my work was not good enough. And it was kind of like a night and day situation from going like from like a lot of praise. Like, I was heaped with praise from this exact person to saying everything I did was shit.
Wow.
And so it was like, wow, you like complete. And I was a writer. So I have not really written since. I did a few bits of writing immediately after that situation ended. And it was probably some of my best writing came out after that.
Okay.
And then it kind of like it dawned on me. I was like, no, I'm not a good writer. And I haven't written since. Like, wow. I cannot write. And it's really bad. She really broke me down.
That sounds like a trauma, especially if it's like created a block for you where you can no longer kind of access that point of your kind of personal creative expression.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say, I think sometimes when we get to that kind of particularly beliefs like I'm not good enough, it can sound surface, right? It can sound like, well, if you think about some of the great stuff you've done, then you'll know that's not true. One of the things that I really realized is that wasn't, it wasn't about what I was doing, because I'd achieved a hell of a lot. I mean, at the point in which I'm in the therapy room saying I feel this, I'd just graduated first class.
Yeah.
So it wasn't about what I was doing. I realized that I felt like I was not good enough as a value, or had value as a person inside.
Yeah.
And then I was recognizing that came from like, particularly like issues of abandonment, you know, particularly like the dynamics of my relationships with my parents, like those sorts of things that were subconscious messaging to me that I did not matter. So that no matter how much I built on top of that, whatever I achieved was on the foundation of, at a soul level, I don't think I'm enough.
Yeah.
So that would never satisfy it. It doesn't matter what I do. I could get a million first classes, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm still going to feel like that. And I was recognizing actually then, and that's why The Gift of Imperfections is a great book too, because I had to recognize that my value can't be placed in any of those things. And I think that's also what helped me shift out of, I am a smart Black woman, you know, because that was my safe place.
Yeah.
I am really intelligent, you know, and that is what's great about me. And that's going to get me through the world. And I was like, this is not helping. I am valuable. If I'm smart or I'm not smart, doesn't matter if I read or I don't read, if I write books or don't, like, my value has nothing to do with any of the external stuff. And that's how I got to that kind of, well, I don't know nothing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know some stuff and I don't know some other stuff. Like,
you get.
Yeah.
All right. So final questions for the podcast. What's the worst advice you've ever received? And what's the best advice you've ever received? I like to end on a high.
Worst advice. Leave him. No, I'm joking. Leave him, girl. Yeah, I'm actually going to keep that as my worst advice.
Girl.
I think that's really important. And it's something that I feel is coming up in a lot of my tarot readings with people trying to navigate emotional situations. And I said this as well, like, meme culture can be very damaging to us because we talk about relationships in a way that's very transactional, you know, like, if he ain't doing this for you, then he ain't shit. And if you ain't doing this, then, you know, it's too transactional. And people are making very fear-based decisions, you know, and love is messy and complicated and complex. And sometimes we're having experiences that are actually for our healing and our growth, but we're so concerned about what that looks like to other people.
Absolutely.
So I'm in a place in my life, for example, where I don't really give my friends like advice, like about their love lives. I just don't. Like if they ask me, I could chip in, but on the
you
whole,
have a 2 cents to throw
I can,
in.
But on the whole, like I am very much like, what do you think? What do you want to do? What's your decision here? And also validating, like, I trust you, like, I trust you to make a healthy choice. Like, I'm finding that is such a healing thing, particularly for women to hear. So often we're told, you don't make good choices. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're incapable, you're too emotional, or, you know, now I tell my friends, I think you're brilliant. I trust you. Even if you make a mistake right now, I know you're going to get to the point that's right for you. That's who I am. And I'm thinking it works wonders. So in terms of the worst advice, leave him has been it. And the best advice I've had was actually from a psychiatrist. I have the unique experience of having seen one, because you usually don't get to that point in terms of mental health care in the UK.
Yeah, you don't.
Unless you're experiencing psychosis, very, very severe mental illness. So I felt like it was a real mercy from God in some ways that I had that experience, and it was very healing for me. I'm always wanting to say names of people, like I almost said his name, but he might not appreciate that. But he was a really amazing, wonderful person. And I was thinking about this week, like sitting in his office and the terrible state that I was in. And that was only last year. And I'm not talking about 2010 now. This was 2015. Wow. I was suicidal at that point.
Yeah.
All part of my spiritual growth in many ways, but again, like in so much pain. And when I say suicidal, I mean like really wanted and was planning to end my life. Mm. And being there with him and him just letting me know how ordinary my pain was, you know, like, and I guess we experience that when we listen to music, you know, like when we listen to music, we recognize that so much of what we feel is universal. But when you're in the worst of your mental health, you feel particularly and specifically mad and particularly and specifically unable to cope.
Yeah.
And he was like, this is really super ordinary. And that was my worst, lowest point. I was like, so this not you know, this is all right. Like, and he was like, yeah, this is really ordinary. Like,
I love that. That's beautiful advice. And so poignant, because usually people panic and it's kind of akin to panicking. And sometimes in the heart of a panic attack, all you need to do is just kind of just like breathe.
Yeah.
Just breathe.
Just breathe.
Thank you so much, Leona. This has been so much fun.
How generous is Leona? I just cannot with her. Go and follow Leona immediately on YouTube and Instagram at Leona Nicole Black. That's LeonaNicoleBlack. If you're interested in tarot, I highly recommend checking her YouTube channel out first. Visit her website, NicoleBlack.com, to find out more about her services and her PhD. If you like how this podcast is sounding and you think you can do what I do, or maybe you just want to give it a try, check out the Shoutout Network at shoutoutnetwork.co.uk to find out about these amazing membership options starting at just £99 a month. Oh, and we're launching a new book podcast next week called Not Another Book Podcast, so stay tuned for that. Be sure to follow Wannabe on Twitter and Instagram at Wannabe Podcast. I love interacting with you guys over there, so please do follow. If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes or just hit the stars and leave a rating. Music is by Audio Binger, What Dreams Become. Thank you for listening and see you next week. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.